Thanks for tuning in to your Day Off Podcast, hosted by your boys, Corey and Tony.
I think by the end of today, I might have another best friend.
They're committed to making you fall in love with the hair industry, one podcast at a time.
You're going to grab a lot of information.
Yeah,
you're going to learn a lot.
Presented by Hair Industry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it.
Your Day Off Podcast will begin after a word from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to your day off. My name is Courtney. Of course, I sit with my best friend Tony, and we have a surprise guest today with Miss Katie May. What's up, Tony?
What's up, brother? How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing, Katie?
I'm good. I'm excited.
I'm excited that you're here, man.
We
don't get to do without it being a special event.
I don't get to grace you with my presence.
It's a special event because of our guest.
But, we need to do this more often.
We do. I kind of like having a girl's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and apparently she makes the place look a lot better.
No doubt. We have witnesses for that.
We have judgment from that. Dude, I am so excited about why do we always say that? I hate when I say we're so excited, but it's true. We're so excited about the podcast today. It's actually not only one of our favorite podcasts, but it's also we get a lot of response to the podcast. Today we have on Mr. Gordon Miller, and it's the what we like to build the State of the Industry a podcast. It was inspired by the State of the Union, which you when the president speaks in front of Congress in January, and I thought how interesting it would be to talk about the state of the industry, and I thought nobody was more presidential than our guest today.
Oh, without a doubt.
Wait, which president are we talking? don't answer that.
No, well, we're not.
Yeah, no. It really is. I mean, it's like having, like having family on, right? I mean, yeah. Literally, he is a mentor for us. He's a friend. He's a true. He is like family.
With a lot of knowledge, because all year long, I'll text Gordon if I have a question, whether it's a number or whether his opinion about where the industry is, just about whatever pops up on social or pops up in the news or something. So we have lots and lots of conversations, but at least once a year, we get to sit down and chat about them. Last year, surprised himself a little bit. He was a little optimistic about the industry, and Gordon's not really the one that sees the world through optimistic eyes. We have a few questions about from last year that we'll get into, and then we'll get into this year. And anyways, should we get in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Gordon, welcome back to the State of the Industry. What, in 2024, right? Or 2020? I don't know. Whatever it is,
we'll talk about 2023, and then.
We'll get lead into 2024. Yeah, for sure.
It is great to be back. It is great to be back. I do have to say, like a list of comments, is in my head. I know you guys open and the guests are supposed to stay quiet, So first of all, I'm thrilled that Katie's here. I feel a little less attractive than I normally feel here when she's not here, because next to you guys, I come off pretty good. As soon as you throw Katie into the mix, there's a little bit of a problem. So that disappoints me in spite of my adoration, for having Katie here. And I assume that she'll be a little bit of the peanut gallery. So kind of like a few years back, one of those State of the Union things that you mentioned. I remember somebody in the audience going, liar! And so that'll be Katie's job today.
We have notes from last year, so she'll call you out.
There you go.
Yeah,
and remember, those were predictions. I don't have a crystal ball. I'm very curious. I should have gone back and listened.
Yeah, and also we brought her in so you can feel the way we feel all the time.
I take that so many ways.
Yeah.
I balance everyone out, okay?
In a good way. In a good way.
More than you know. So, I mean, just as a broad, like, to open up the conversation, how did last year go in the industry? Do you think it was a positive year? Do you think, you know, where are we?
I mean, nobody really has the numbers yet, so it's so fascinating. Big picture, the corporations seem to do really well, at least that's what I'm hearing, you know, through third quarter, you know, the fourth quarter stuff isn't really out yet. But it looks like, you know, brands did well. It looks like the big distributors did well. I'm not quite as confident in getting reports yet from the independents, but corporate side seemed to do really well. And that usually means that the industry generally should have done well. The chatter is interesting. Most of the people I talked to and know pretty well, you know, had a great year, you know, but then the online social chatter is very much the opposite. I feel like, oh, this was one of the more challenging years ever. We really killed it in 2022. A lot of people fell back. So I feel like there's kind of two big realities, you know, maybe three, you know, the third being just kind of like business as usual or business as, just a lot of industries still has no clue how business is from year to year, day to day, even. Actually, just aren't paying attention enough. I mean, I think that's the nature of small business. But then again, vocally, and not just vocally, just, you know, talking with the more experienced, the more successful with a little or a lot of experience, just killing it. And the killing it seems to be mostly from just doing what we've always done, known has worked. And then you've got a whole lot of others who seem to be struggling a little bit. And I think, and some are struggling a lot. And I do believe a lot of it is just kind of a correction from 2022. All that success that was talked about, I think a lot of it was price increases that maybe were too much. Just a lot of stuff. There's been a lot of blowback this year. So I think it's a little bit all over the board. We're not going to know much until, you know, final numbers come in at the corporate level and we start to get a better sense of salons too. So time will tell.
I know that, like, when I was at ABS last year, you and I on Monday were having a conversation in the middle of the floor, and it kind of felt like a Saturday. Like it seems like the shows are, I don't know if they're ever going to be like pre-pandemic wise, but
no, I don't think so.
But last year there was a huge uptick in all the shows that we went to as far as attendance goes, as far as classes go. And just
relative to 2020, relative to the year before, which was a somewhat of a disaster.
Right, but even relative to a couple years before, it just kind of felt. Let me back up. Even if it's not as the people, the energy was there. Like, it was high energy.
Agreed.
There, it seems like, and this is just layman. You certainly would know the numbers better, but it seemed like there was a huge uptick at the shows, like extension work and people teaching extensions and the extension classes were crazy. Is that still viable, and is it a strong point in our industry?
Yeah, I mean, everything you see in here and the extension, there's been a ton of money, you know, poured into the extension business, acquisitions and all kinds of stuff. So it feels like it finally has arrived and it's not going anywhere. And you know, again, there's no data around it other than, you know, going to the show floors. I mean, clearly the extension companies have taken pretty serious real estate. And so I think, and the sophistication, you know, of the companies has grown and the models has grown and the quality of everything is up there. So I would say absolutely. It's very niche still. I've not seen any numbers like how many salons offer extensions and how deep people go, but it's here and it's here to stay.
So it's not Vivids, huh?
Well, I mean, Vivids are still around. So in Trader Joe's, you know, two of my checkout people always have their Vivids, but they both do them at home. You know, Vivids.
Oh, nothing? Okay.
Cool. Is that one I was supposed to say, liar?
I don't know.
I mean, Vivids is a category. I mean, all you have to do is look at Pulp Riot, I think, to have a sense of, you know, it feels like it's very much flattened out. You know, it's not what it once was. And I think, you know, Vivids has always been more inside the industry. I've always looked at the math of Vivids and said, what percentage of all dollars being spent in the Vivid hair color category when it comes to product, the product itself, is ending up on hairdressers' heads versus clients' heads? No one's been able to answer that for me. I have a feeling the numbers would be shocking. It is what it is.
It's like a slow play. Like, it's very cool and had this huge, like, boom.
But and it's becoming still more and more it like leaking into the corporate world and things like that, especially with people working from home and, you know, having a lot more flexibility with their jobs. It's becoming slowly a more norm kind of across the board. But I think it's like an ebb and flow with Vivids. Like when a new company comes out, you know, with a whole line, like when, I know when Pulp hit, it was like, holy crap, like these are awesome colors and new. Right. So it kind of had a boom. So whenever there's a brand that kind of elevates it, it gets really hot, especially with hairdressers and more artistic groups. And then kind of like fashion, it slowly leaks out to everybody else.
I kind of think it's like, it was such a, it showed so well on social. So when social first came out and we were trying to, and we were looking for attention, I think that, that a lot of attention went around Vivids. But to Gordon's point earlier that people are doing it at home. Right, because still the expense of it is it's way expensive to do. The upkeep is incredible for it. And by the way, it lasts like a week. You know, I can't tell you how uncomfortable those conversations as an operator is. It's like, yeah, this is awesome. This is beautiful. It's going to cost you like two mortgages and it's going to last for a week, you know? So like that's a hard sell. That's a hard sell for us. You know, I think that at home market is probably a stronger market for the company. And I don't know if that's their play or not. You know what I mean? But I think it's
I don't know. But I've talked a lot to consumers, just people I run into all over the place. I'm always curious. For years now, you know, I've been asking people where they get their hair, their Vivids done. I've yet to meet a consumer who's had one done in the salon, which is weird, you know, thinking about it. But I've easily talked to probably well over 100 people, you know, just everywhere, planes, trains, automobiles, you know, just everywhere. But it's fascinating.
Well, you've talked to lots of people that have had them done in the salons. They just happen to be working in a salon.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true too.
So,
but you know, interestingly, let me add this. I said this the other day in front of a crowd. You know, we're kind of in an era of incrementalism. You know, meaning that, you know, we're a fairly mature industry, and so much of success is in the is just in the margins of everything. You know, growing a business at a certain point is about, you know, how do you add a little bit here, a little bit there? How do you take your Vivids category, if that's the service you offer, and add a little bit there? How do you bring in extensions and pick up a little bit there? How do you cut your expenses a little bit? This kind of incremental growth, which is kind of a common thought process around mature businesses. I think we need to be thinking that way more about our industry.
Mm, that's good. That's real good. How we talked a little bit about price. Where are we as far as like a price increase? I know even as short ago as like 2019, 2020, you were concerned that as an industry, we were still undercharging a bit. Do you think we've caught up? Because it seems like everybody's talking about price increase and everybody, frankly, has done price increase. Even my man Tony here did a price increase.
I would hope so. Again, there's no research. You know, it just sucks that we have such bad, you know, access to really true information. So we base everything on what we hear. And, you know, big picture for the industry, I think that's what's the biggest problem that we have, because it's the biggest problem we have as a country. You know, it's like we don't even know what the truth is anymore. It's just very good. And that's not political. It's just like about everything. You know, it's like, what's true? You know, and I think it's true of our industry. So, you know, if you go based on the conversations, it feels like everybody has, but I know that's not true, because we have a big chunk of the industry that doesn't really participate in all this stuff. And I know when I look at my neighborhood salon, some of the smaller ones that just, you know, aren't really happening. They're just like little tiny mom and pops that are on the low end of the price point. They don't seem to have made many changes. So, but those who we pay more attention to, you know, who are, you know, probably in the 50, probably half the industry, I would assume they have. And again, I'm hearing an awful lot who are kind of reconsidering or not reconsidering. They raise their prices and now they're just going, oh my gosh, you know, I had a terrible year. And it's like, you know, people aren't coming. And what's happened to people? Not what's happened maybe to what I'm doing in my business that's impacting how people think about me. Because one of the challenges is we don't usually know why we lose clients. They just don't come back. So there's a lot of that. So I feel like, yes, we've probably increased prices, those who are kind of seriously in the game. I think there's a portion who have overcorrected because they got bad advice. We had a blowing up of coaches, you know, that came post-pandemic. that I think had an impact on a lot of salons. Again, we don't know the math. We don't know. When I look at all the coaches and just start multiplying how many people they could be working with, and some of them make up crap about that. And you hear some coaches, we work 1,000 salons. And then you go look at their salon locator and they got 50 people, you know, so it's like, what? So, you know, how many people are really being directly influenced by coaches through that? And I think there's been some issues there overcorrecting for past mistakes and not. And then I think you have those who are just listening, who are making decisions on their own. Everybody's saying, raise your prices, we're raising ours. And we just don't have a good sense of success or failure, you know. And there's a lot of salons that jumped on the price increase bandwagon, might have done it right, but don't have the communication capabilities to effectively sell a client on a price increase, which is its own problem. You know, we got to communicate with our people, especially if we're making up for years of not increasing our prices. And that in itself is another problem. You have too many salons who haven't raised prices in 10 years, decided to make up for all 10 years in one increase. That is strategically a nightmare. And when we blame our clients for that, like, you effed up your business, you didn't raise your prices, that's on you. Now, if you're going to correct your prices, you got to be a business person and figure out, how do we get there, you know, and not throw myself under the bus in the process. And I've seen salons throwing themselves under the bus.
Well, and then you look, we talked about this earlier on social, you like one post of someone talking about raising your prices, and then you get 40 other posts about raising your prices and how your business. So it's kind of like
a good point.
You know, that affects people too, I think.
Well, it certainly does. But you know, on that though, Gordon, I mean, this is twofold. This is both like pointing the finger and trying to absorb the information a little bit, is that I don't know how, if you haven't raised your prices and you do a color service, how you can stay afloat. You know, it seems like our color's gone up from like $7 or $8 a tube to almost $12 a tube now, you know. So, you know, it's almost gone
up. But you're talking $5. I mean, so seriously, so let's say it's 100. How much is that color? Let's walk through the math. I think it's a fascinating exercise. So I'm the client. I come in. I've got beautiful, long, wavy hair.
I love it.
Sure, kind of like what I had in 1974. I had kind of really kind of a nice thing going on.
You don't have pictures. It didn't happen.
I do have pictures. I had hair down halfway down my shoulder. I had some hair back in the day. So I got all this hair and I'm coming in for a color service. And so tell me what it is, and the fast version of how much you're going to charge me for the service and how much is your cost of product.
Oh,
you haven't made an increase. But today, you're that example you just gave me. How much are you going to charge me for the service, and what's your cost to color product?
I mean, let's say $100 to make it easier. Okay. Right?
Yeah. And your color cost was $7, and now it's $12. Right?
Right. Yeah. Yes.
You're two. Okay. So it went up $5. So you got to raise me to stay even. I'm not talking about getting ahead, but worst case, you just want to stay even. You don't want to be worse off than you were before. So you got to raise your color service price to the client, everything included, from 100 to 105, and you're even.
Yeah, 5%.
And you're even. 5%, that's nothing. Like if you're any good, a client's going to go, okay, whatever. I mean, if you can communicate even a little bit, that should not. So yes, I agree with you completely. And anybody who's nervous about going from 100 to 105, I'm like, you know, you A, need to sort out the communication aspect of this, because this should not be for anybody a difficult sale, especially if you haven't raised your prices forever and you can have a rational conversation.
Absolutely. And that $5, I mean, are they willing to take a risk with another hairdresser, or, you know what I mean? Because that
right.
turned out great, or it could be a nightmare. Yeah, I mean, so
that's, and you have an explanation. All I'm doing is passing on my cost increase. I'm not even marking it up. You know, if it was me and I was nervous, I probably would take out my Salon Center or Cosmoprof bill and be like, I just want you to actually see. All I'm doing is passing on the cost. A lot of businesses are marking up. I don't know if you go to the restaurants, you know, but you know, they're doubling down. So you know, most businesses, you know, whatever your increases are, yeah, you usually mark up your markup, you know, because you know you need to in a certain way. And if you're keeping up with price increases, doing it annually, this is not a big deal. And this is what I heard from so many, even coming through pandemic. It's kind of like we were good before the craziness economically started, the inflation. And I would argue still that as bad as we've had, back to what Katie said about social, there's been so much, God help you if you click on an inflation anything, you know, and then you start to see it and see it and see it. And there's a lot of confusion. You know, some people are like, you know, inflation is 50%. You know, and inflation at the salon level is not the same as at the grocery store. And so you know, you have to get real about inflation too. And the overall inflation for salons, once you push past single items like color, and that's a big deal for salons. Colors are a big thing. But if you put it in the context of all of your costs, our inflation is not like 20%. I mean, it's not, you know, unless your rents went through the roof, which most rents were going a little bit in the other direction, you know. Depends where you're at, but you have to look at your entire business model. You can't just look at color.
Yeah, I mean, rent goes up 3% usually annually,
depending on the kind of lease you have, you know.
Yeah. So, and you know, I think it for me, Corey and I, we talked about, you know, 10% was the perfect raise for us in order to keep up with inflation, keep up with product costs, keep up with
absolutely
able to maintain what you made the year before.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And did you lose a lot of clients, either of you, through that 10%?
Zero.
No, zero.
Because zero. I've been doing these clients since the dawn of time.
But you know, and you make it good.
Yay.
We're definitely in a different, you know, and by the way, your price increase last year went up like 50%.
Yes, so it did. Because I switched to hourly. That's why my price increase went big, yeah.
Which is great. And if you can do that and communicate effectively with your clients, which I think that's the block that people have, that's where people get stuck, you know, because, and I think, you know, here's what's confusing about hourly and Katie, you probably, you know, have an answer, you know, because the raise of 50% doesn't always translate into 50% of that your revenue goes up 50% necessarily. It just depends on how you do what you do and how hourly translates into the effect across your entire business. And if you've got 50% increase in your revenue at the top line, good for you. And if you did it without losing anybody, you need to go on the road and tell other people how to do it. Because there's a lot of people who did go hourly who lost a lot of business because they didn't know how to communicate what they were doing.
My clients love it. And I mean, essentially what I did was took my average service ticket and then upped it to like the closest 25. So and yeah, my clients, everything's included now. They're leaving with their hair feeling better and looking better because I'm just doing the treatment or doing the glaze or doing what I think their hair needs. And because I've already kind of calculated what it's going to cost on average, you know, with those things included for each client, it's like they're already getting it. And then if they don't get it or they don't want it for whatever reason, which, you know,
so
I wouldn't.
So you're doing the sales pitch once when you do hourly, not every appointment.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And tips included too.
Got rid of tips too, right?
Yep. Yeah.
That's interesting.
And they love it. And I love it.
And yeah. And again, if you're doing it in a way that you can communicate it, you know, then it's great. Because I don't think most of this is a block. We are not an industry that is very good at communication. We know that big picture. And that's probably the biggest reason we see so many people who struggle, because they don't want to do price increases because they don't want to talk about it. You know, they don't want to make other changes because they don't want to talk about it because they don't know how to talk about it, or they're fear-based, you know? And so it's interesting, you know, but I love it. Good for you. Fantastic.
Well, as far as communication, and I hope it's okay for me to pivot. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
with the communication, because yes, we're artists and, you know, typically terrible at communication, but how do you think AI this year has affected our communication in the salon?
Not much, you know, because I don't think the majority of people use it or have used it yet. So of those who are using it, you know, I'm finding, you know, yeah, some people are using it in social, you know, some people are using it, you know, playing around with it, trying to get used to. Some are using it for, you know, the geeky, like the really, you know, early adopters. I think a lot of them are looking at their financial stuff with it. They're doing some design stuff with it. They're doing marketing and email stuff with it. But, you know, I don't think we know enough It's not that we don't even know enough. I don't think it's deep enough where we've got an industry shift of any kind yet. I will say I was at Serious Business, and I, between two classes, had about 500 in it. And I asked each group, I was like, you know, who's using it? And it was like 70% had begun to use it. But then in conversations afterwards, it became really clear that, yeah, people were, you know, kind of putting their toe in the water, which excited the heck out of me. But I think it's early. You know, and I don't think, you know, a year from now we'll be talking about ChatGPT or any of the way we're like the guys in the 80s who are building their computers in the garage. You know, that's where I feel like we are. We're like the early adopters, and the old days, and most people are too young to remember, but that's what people did in the early days of the PC. You know, it's like nobody thought we really would have a personal computer. Everybody thought, you know, we had the big machines, but you had the hobbyists. You know, they were all at home doing it, and they led the movement. We're kind of in that version, and AI is going to be inside of everything. And so, you know, we won't have to think about it. It's already coming. It's already in Microsoft Word and Excel, and it's going to come into all the booking platforms. And I don't think we'll be doing much on our own, to be honest.
I think on the next update for Apple too, the Siri is going to be then IA based as well. Mm-hmm. AI. That was
it, I mean, it already is, but it's going to be enhanced. It's going to be a much deeper level of AI, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, Siri and Alexa are both, they've always been, you know, a form of AI, but yeah. So it's going to be interesting, but I think it's going to have a huge impact over time, but I don't think we're there yet, you know, but I don't think it's, you know, fundamentally our biggest challenge is one-on-one verbal communication with people, because that's the critical communication that gives people confidence in everything that we're doing, and willingness to pay more, or buy more, or do more, you know, in the salon. So I don't think we'll ever escape that. You know, I think we'll hopefully do a better job with marketing, and more people will want to come to our salon. But then ultimately, if they're going to stay in our salon as clients, it depends on how good a job we do engaging with them one-on-one in the time they're sitting in the chair.
Mm. What do you think about, and it certainly, I don't know, seems like a trend, but people going like deskless, salons going deskless.
You know, there's not a whole lot new in the industry, honestly. You know, technology changes, you know, that has always happened. You know, I was alive when the calculator happened. It was a big change. So we've moved on from that, but believe it or not, the calculator was a big change. And so the deskless thing has been going on for a decade, you know, easily, you know, meaning in my neighborhood, I've got like 26 salons I can walk by. They pretty much all have a desk. I think two have people who work behind the desk. So the desk was a thing, you know, and there was some chatter. It's like, oh, you know, the desk was a new thing that the brand shoved into the industry, which is such a weird comment. My mother's 88. I said to her, I was like, did your salon have a desk back in the 1950s, the place where people walked up? She's like, well, where were they going to put the phone if there was no desk? Of course there was a desk. Salons have always had a desk of some sort, or at least probably from the 1920s. And so the desk has become less relevant in terms of hiring an individual person, depending on the size of the salon, which, by the way, should have always been a decision point. And most salons in my area, they didn't get rid of the desk. They just haven't had a person standing behind it for most of them. Like the salons I'm near, like none of them let anybody go during pandemic that I can think of. They had done that before pandemic. They just didn't need it anymore because of cell phones and because of all the other things that changed. So it's not like some earth shattering, oh my God, everybody's getting rid of their desk. They're getting rid of, some have gotten rid of the people who stood behind a desk. And now the desk is the place where the mail comes. And believe it or not, you know, mail does still get delivered, and they want a place to put it. So they put it on the desk. They don't want to spend the money to get rid of the desk.
Well, I was going to say, isn't it semantics? I mean, if you said that only two of them have people, then that's like, you know, the other 24 of them essentially got rid of their desk. I mean, for what we know.
Over the last 10 years, everybody's acting like it's new. Like there's almost nothing new to this. You know, and I just came from a conference of some of the best salons in the country, like 1,100 people, and most of them have receptionists because they're multi-million dollar salons.
Sure.
And yes, they're leveraging all the technology, but these are salons, some of them that are doing hundreds of thousands of dollars in retail. And so, yes, they've made a business case to themselves that yes, having a a person. It might be a receptionist, might be an admin person, it might be a manager, but you know, they have a person who's probably has no responsibility doing service, who is helping take care of the business in a way that, you know, needs to be done. And they would argue that that person has a relationship with the desk and may or may not. You go to better salons, and again, I have two in my neighborhood that are one's an intercoiffure salon. And yes, every time I walk by, the first thing I see is a desk, and there's a person standing there, and they're always engaging with people. So
that's awesome.
If they make money for you, that's the bottom line. Is it making money for you? If it's not, should it be? So that you have the wrong person or the wrong process or the wrong procedure, or you're not big enough. You're not big enough. Yes, it's, you know, you're a salon doing 200 grand a year because that's just what you're doing in service dollars. It would be hard to justify a desk unless you saw value in bringing someone in that would change your business. Like, by bringing this person in, our business will grow, and that's an investment we've decided to make, and we'll evaluate it as we go. Everything's been oversimplified into black and white, and it's weird, and I've always talked about this. I hate that we think of our industry as one amorphous thing. It's not, you know? The luxury salon is very different than the middle of the road salon, which is very different than the value price salon, which is very different than the independent. It's like several categories of the industry, probably four or five categories. The barber shop, you know, is a very different animal, and it even has a higher end category, which is quite small, and then everything else. So if you apply these ideas about change to each of the categories, I think the answer will be different. And we shouldn't be so general, because again, back to Katie's point, you clicked on something about not having a desk, you're going to see a whole lot of stuff, and you're going to say, everybody's getting rid of their desk. And that's just such an oversimplification.
It's almost like, it's sort of like the automobile industry, right? I mean, 100 years ago, you had a motor and four wheels. The cars today have a motor and four wheels. Just the body might look different. You might have new technology. So I think even with the salons, you know, you have a salon that it works. That's what everything's built off. People are going to take away from, add to. They're going to try to put a spin on it, trying to make it, you know, different to attract business. But at the end of the day, it's still, the people business. I mean, it's you're not going to add a whole lot to it to make it different other than, you know, technology or just the appearance.
Think about the phone. Again, I mentioned a minute ago, back in the 1950s, when my mom was going to salons when she was a lot younger, there was a phone. You called the phone and you made an appointment. We still have phones. You know, they happen to be mobile phones. You don't have many who have landlines anymore. And individuals have phones that people can contact them depending on how the salon has set itself up to make appointments. So, yeah, we still have phones and we use them to communicate clients. We just do it in a different way, you know, and arguably it's a completely different way, but it's still a phone. We still communicate. We need to be able to communicate with our customers and potential customers when they're not in our buildings.
Well, I would argue that that's, it's not just a phone. it's more than that. Did you ever see that ad? It was like a Radio Shack ad
it was always an evolution of the phone.
Sure.
So there was when I was a kid, I was born into a home that had a party phone. Party line phone, not a party phone. We didn't party on the phone. We had a party line phone. So when you picked up the phone, there could be some, your neighbors could be on it. Literally, your neighbors, you had to wait your turn. That's how it worked back in the early, early days. You know, and then we didn't have that. But then I remember when the little beep you would get, someone was calling you. That was like an evolution of the phone, with the princess phone, when the phone wasn't on the wall. So the phone, yes, and now the phone is way more, the phone is a computer, blah, blah, blah. But it's still functionally, you know, the way we can do a party phone. it's a different kind of party phone, big time.
Oh my God. Hey, Gordon, earlier you, okay, so, I don't know how to want to set this up. Well, earlier you said that you think that the brands, or you've heard that the brands have had a pretty big year or a good year.
Good year.
That's what I said. Mm-hmm. And then last year we were talking about the trend, and you were certainly against it, but the trend of people abandoning like retail in the salon. So it's certainly, there's been a lot of conversation. Certainly this year, we've talked a lot about it too, about people giving up retail in the salon. So, you know, those two comments don't equate. Can you kind of like filter through that for me?
Well, there's again, you've got these loud voices that are screaming, you know, get rid of your retail, retail's bad, blah, blah, blah. You know, what the real impact of those voices, you know, is, you know, it's interesting. Again, how many coaches are there? You know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, you know, we don't even know that, you know. So, and then again, how many people are they actually working with, and how many people are they influencing beyond the people they work with? So there's no data that says like salons have wholesale walked away from retail. We know that, you know, 80% of salons never did much in retail. So there's, you know, there's a lot of questions as to the impact. I know individually, you know, sometimes when you hear that salons have done it, and again, in the early parts of the conversation, industry-wide conversation, you had little videos of people going, oh, I'm grabbing all the product, and I'm throwing it in the trash can, and like turn it into a meme, you know, which is just crazy stuff. But all of it's based, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you guys, you know, are hearing everything being said, it seems to all be based in that you should get rid of it because you can't make any money. You know, and if that's the theme, again, we're back to fake, crazy ass beauty news, like crazy fake news. Like, it's mathematically stupid. Like, anybody who says it is just, I'm sorry. Now, that doesn't mean you need to retail. That doesn't mean you'll be good at it. You know, like I say to everybody, it's like, you don't have to do color. That's a choice. You don't have to do extensions. That's a choice. You don't have to cut hair. That's a choice. Choose what you want to do. It's your career. And there's all kinds of options. That's the great thing about the industry. You do not have to retail. But that doesn't mean that people who do retail well don't make money. It's idiotic. And there's this big conversation that's happening on social that feels, you know, loud. Again, we don't know how far it reaches. That just says very simply that if you buy something for 10 and sell it for 20, that you didn't make any money. And that is so mathematically backwards, like ignorant, like it just doesn't even make a bit of sense, because I take $10 and I buy something, whatever it is, and I turn around, I sell it for 20. I now have $20 less the 10 I spent. I have a $10 profit. Then some will say, yeah, but then you got to go buy another $10 worth of product so you didn't make any money. And I'm like, well, it's the first 10 that you spent that you were given back. And you're going to respend it by choice, by the way. The other 10 is still in your pocket. Now, there's a much more complex conversation about, well, what about the rest of my costs? Well, that's true of every part of your business. And that's an individual business conversation. If you can't figure out the math of how to make money on retail, then don't sell retail. But if you get somebody who understands retailing, they can certainly give you clarity on the math, because... But I get most people don't want to retail. So there's a lot of people, when someone says, you know, that, you know, I grew up, you know, I hated broccoli as a kid, you know, and I lived in a house where you ate everything on your plate. You didn't leave the table. Like, you know, I remember sitting there for like 2 hours waiting on the broccoli. Nothing worse than a little 6-year-old eating cold broccoli too, by the way. But if I had an aunt who came over and said, hey, broccoli's bad for you. Like, broccoli's bad. You don't have to eat broccoli. Broccoli's, I'd be like, can I go live with her? You know, and that doesn't mean broccoli's bad for anybody. It just means I'm hearing what I want to hear. I'm hearing that my behavior, which is probably not right, you know, because I'm just making it, you know, I was making a choice not based on what I didn't like. I just had decided I ain't doing broccoli, period. You know, so I think that's where we're on retail. Just a lot of, most of the industry isn't successful at it. Most of the industry doesn't like it. People are like, I'm not a salesperson. Okay. And now someone says, it's bad. It's just so easy to buy into the bullshit. And it is bullshit. And, you know, I'm not saying this because I, you know, am promoting retail for brands. I don't care about any of that stuff. I have lots of people I know in the industry who live in really, really nice homes. When you talk to them, they're like, paid by retail. Paid by retail.
I'm an educator for Pureology, and most of the salons I go to, because I'm tier 3 out of 4, so I'm pretty expensive for them to pay for me outright to come in. Most of them get me for free because of retail.
Exactly. Most education in the industry that's high quality is being funded by retail. Most again, I was with all these really successful, powerful salons, you know, in New Orleans, a serious business, and so many conversations about this topic, because they're scratching their head going, more money for us. So it's like, great, everybody drop your retail. We're killing it. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Carrie Davis, one of my favorite coaches in the industry, about it, and one of the most successful salon owners in the industry, Gil Root Salons in San Diego. She's like, I pay for my education. I pay for my 401ks. You know, I pay for, you know, a profit sharing of sort type of, I don't remember all exactly the details, but she provides all of her benefits to her employees by way of retail and a lot more, you know, and it, you know, kept her business up to date with everything, her physical facilities. I mean, she uses retail to really do a lot within her business to benefit everybody who works there, her clients, and herself as a business owner. It works. It's been proven so many times. And it just bugs the crap out of me.
In the statistic, it's like every time someone gets their hair done, it's like within the next 72 hours, they're going to purchase a product or something, whether it's from you or someone else. I mean, that's true.
We all, like 100% of people in America who have, you know, two nickels buy shampoo on a regular basis. Period. Now you can say, oh, well, they buy the group, whatever. Everybody needs it. The question is, are you good enough at what you do to convince me that I need it from you?
That's a boom.
That's all.
How do you think the online space, as far as retail goes, like Salon Interactive and the different, you know, third parties that are coming up?
It's not happening, you know, so it's not happening. I mean, it's happening, but the numbers don't make any sense. And look, if that makes you happy and you're able to do it, great. So here's the challenge. If we can't move the retail needle individually within a salon or as a professional, for whatever reason, and by the way, that typically takes saying to someone out loud, this would be good for you. Mm-hmm. Some version of that. You should buy this. And here's why. Instead, and we fail at that somehow, if our alternative is, here's a better way, tell people to go to a website and buy it. My argument would be most professionals who don't successfully sell retail don't remember to even mention it to the majority of clients. We think we're going to remember to send them to a website?
Right.
You think me as a client is going to care to go to a website? Like you just basically said to me, you don't even care enough about the product to carry it. Like you don't. I mean, it's just such a disconnect to at least to a sophisticated consumer. But there's no proof. There's no big chatter online about, look at all the money I'm making through my affiliate. And when you dig a little deeper to the little bit of you hear about that, it's always the coaches again. You should do this, but where's the example? Like, show me the person who's killing it, and let's hear more from that person. And I know they exist. It's not that they're not there, but none of the brands are talking about it in a way that's significant. Again, we're back to incrementalism. If I owned a salon, I would sell retail in person, and yes, I would have an affiliate program of sorts or some sort of online booking, or not booking, but purchasing option for clients. Because yeah, some people want to get it that way. Great. But to throw yourself under the bus and get rid of what I would argue is the easy play, if you have your act together, which is to get people to buy retail in your salon. If you're independent, I think it's a different conversation. I think it's easier to not want to have that hassle, you know, because I think what a lot of independents are figuring out, it's not easy to run your own business, period, end of story. There's a lot to do. And so you got to figure out what do you want to do and what can't you do or what shouldn't you do, you know, because it's taking away from other opportunities to grow your business.
Yeah, for sure. All right, this is my favorite part of the of this podcast. Like, looking forward, what do you see for 2024? What are the concerns? Are we wearing optimistic or pessimistic glasses today, Gordon? And kind of walk us through that.
Mostly pessimistic, you know, for the year ahead, but I can't really easily define that. So I'm somewhat pessimistic for the world in 2024 and pessimistic for the state of American, I'll say, conversations. You know, we're coming into a political year and we know what happened the last time we were in a political year. And this feels like the craziest political year of my lifetime. And I'm not taking sides. It just feels crazy. And it's going to get crazier. And all those, I think, smartest people on all sides feel we've never been so divided as a country politically. But over the last however many years, our politics have kind of bled into everything. And there seems to be more and more feeling that there is no such thing as the truth. You know, it's talked about that way. And so, and I feel like that's our industry's following into that a little bit, you know, that we're becoming more tribal, disconnected. So I think, you know, that's going to be a little wonky. I think the truth is going to be less clear to people. I think clients are going to be nervous about what's happening, and the economics could be impacted negatively by just the feeling of chaos. So I just think the world is going to be difficult in 2024, and it could have a lot of implications on the industry. When you separate it from that, you know, it feels a lot of ways like business as usual, you know, but you can't not consider the state of the larger world and how people are going to react to it.
You know, when Instagram first, you know, got popular, it was a fun space to be, you know, I kind of left Facebook because of the politics and that stuff, and like just bummed me out. And sadly, you know, whenever you kind of open up Instagram now, it's everything is tied around some kind of slant or some kind of political or agree with me or you're snot, right? So, you know, Instagram very much, very, very much is feeling like the old, you know, I guess it's the meta way. Very much like that. And it's no longer a place where I go for joy or just to hang out, you know. I certainly go to TikTok for that, you know, just to kind of hang out. But also with TikTok, I don't engage at all. Like I am 100% just a consumer on TikTok. And I'm very careful about what I click on, Katie. I'm very careful about what I click on, because I also know that TikTok is the quickest to fill your feed with whatever you click on, you know, and you got to be careful about what that is. So sadly, I just think that, you know, it's the meta way. And, you know, my Instagram engagement is only by necessary, right? It's not a place that I hang out with. As a matter of fact, I try to get off as quickly as I can, because you start scrolling and it just gets a little sad to me, you know?
I think it's important to say though to everybody, because yes, I think we're all feeling this, and I, who kind of lived in these spaces for a long time, become much more of an observer. I haven't participated in Facebook for probably 6 years, really, you know, as a business person I have, you know, but individually and professionally, as an individual professional, for the same reason as you. But these platforms still work. So if you're marketing and you need a marketing tool, I would encourage everybody to not lose the faith and to find, you know, just what has changed and how can you best use it? Because I think to not use it is a mistake. Having said that, most salons, most professionals have never used it well. I mean, it's shocking to some people, because everybody's like, oh, this is how everybody markets. It's not. I've taught those classes for years, and, you know, came to the realization pre-pandemic, you know, that when I go into a city and get ready to teach something, I'd start looking at salons, and I was like, I can't hardly find any salons in this city that are really good at, who are consistent, who put out good work, who show their salons in the proper way. So we've never collectively been good at it. I think we're worse at it than ever, potentially. And so there's that too. We shouldn't be confused. And then TikTok. Last night I was talking to a mutual friend, Nina Kovner, my best friend on the planet, Passion Squared, and, you know, mentioned something about raccoons and TikTok. My partner he likes raccoons. So I mentioned something about raccoons, and the next thing I know, she sends me a funny raccoon TikTok video. Mm-hmm. And then 10 minutes later, she said, "It's only been 10 minutes. Oh my God. My entire TikTok feed is filled with raccoons." So to your point.
Know your audience.
Yeah, and note to everybody that's listening, send Gordon nothing but raccoon videos. And everybody's feed will be fed with raccoons.
And rock.
They're fun to watch. The raccoons are having a party on TikTok.
That's it. Hey, if you can find a video of raccoons eating broccoli.
Oh, even better.
Oh my God.
So funny.
That's the best. Hey, a shameless plug for a friend of ours. Robbie really wants you to get you on his podcast, The Hairdresser Strong Show. So I'm going to advocate for you to be on there. And I told him that I would put you out on the podcast.
I have already said yes when I met him for the first time in New Orleans, and maybe he's forgetting that. But I just said, send me a date. So I am waiting. I am waiting. I have swiped the proper way. And I'm being ghosted. I don't know.
Now it's on you, Robbie. For those of you that are listening, and if you have like a young talent, or if you have talent that's coming out of hair school, the Hairdresser Strong Show, they've positioned themselves to be an advocate for rising stylists, you know, not just for the people that are coming, but also to communicate, you know, up and down. So, you know, if you're a salon owner, he's advocating or he's communicating, you know, what you should expect in a salon, and B, if you're a salon owner, he's also advocating what you should look for in young hairstyles. I think it's a very unique position he's put himself in, and big shout out to him for seeing it and doing it.
So let me build on that shameless plug and give myself one, because, you know, I'm CEO and president of the Beautycast Network, as well as having a passion project called Social Beauty Makers. But what Beautycast is a platform for students in school that just, it's almost like a media company for students, because there's 4 e-blasts every week that they receive. Teachers get e-blasts, schools get all kinds of content. I mean, it is a platform to inspire young people to get through school, go out and get their first job, and get the right kind of first job. So that's Beautycast Network.
Love the Beautycast Network.
Yes.
We'll end with this, I guess, is where do you see, like a couple of years ago, there were so many, according to all the rumors, there was more chairs than there were people. Where are we?
Yeah. Oh, still, you know, more chairs. There's more chairs than I'll forever argue, you know, unless something radical changes, that when you really do the math of the industry, that we've overbuilt, you know, we just are. It is what it is. It's a math thing. And which is why, you know, you mentioned before the desk, those same salons that I walk by regularly for years. And that's kind of like my little ecosystem of the industry that I kind of project out to others, because it has every kind of salon. It has suites, which, by the way, we didn't get into suites, but I think this is the year for suites to do a correction. There are more suites than we can support as an industry. I'm not anti-suite in any way, but it's been overbuilt. It's a real estate industry. You know, we've got 26 suites, 26 suite organizations in my city. 6-7 years ago, we had none, and they are struggling right now with getting people in, and they are struggling with retention. So you have that going on. I lost my train of thought where I was going back to my salons. Chairs. For years, these salons, most of them are 6, 8, 10 chair salons with 2, 4, 6 people. And that's not changed. And these salons have not reduced the number of chairs because they don't want to spend the money. Same exact, they don't want to get rid of their desks. Most salons have empty chairs in them in this country. They just do. And they've been, many of them, I would say the majority of them, those chairs have been empty for years. And there's too many chairs. A lot of salons have given up trying to fill them. Some kind of go back and forth. It's just, you know, from a capacity to do work versus the actual work we're able to do and the number of clients that we serve, arguably there's too much of everything. What that means, you know, for the industry, who knows? I don't think it means a whole lot, because just because we have a bunch of physical space is built, I mean, we have a whole lot of chairs, that doesn't mean that number, when you aggregate it, is the number that's needed by the American public to take care of their hair. We don't open salons because there was a hue and cry, because there's people who can't get haircuts. That doesn't exist anywhere. Like, anybody wants a haircut can get one. We open salons because someone decided they want to open a new business. We opened 26 suite buildings in a city that didn't need any more chairs. We had more than enough chairs. But they came in, and that's America, and that's small business and big business, and they came in and did it. And now we have even more chairs than we need. Okay, it is what it is.
Do you think that there'll be a natural regression with and I'm looking for clarity here with isn't there a bill in Congress, or wasn't it passed about cosmetology schools and the prediction that we'll lose a lot of those?
There was there's been ever-changing regulations that schools have to meet, you know, from the Department of Education. And so they had regulations that did change. Associated Press did a report on it and said that up to 75% of schools could close. Nobody really knows what's going to happen with that. Cosmo. And the reason for Cosmo is there was a lot of changes that have taken place slowly over the years. And we're kind of an outlier as far as the way the government looks at this. Like some of our numbers, they just don't match what the government would like them to be. You know, we have a different kind of population. A lot feel that that's unfair, but it kind of is what it is. So we don't know what's going to happen. There's a lawsuit right now against the Department of Education. That there was a similar lawsuit like 6 years ago, and we won that lawsuit. We might win this one. So it's hard to know. And I'm not saying, you know, that we don't necessarily, you know, need everybody who's coming through school. It's just, you know, again, it's a complicated conversation. We know in every industry that you need more people to go to school than will end up working because people drop out of school. 50% of students that go to college drop out of college. You know, they drop out of cosmetology. So, you know, the pipeline to keep an industry healthy, it has to be there. It's just hard to understand sometimes what it needs to be, and that's forever shifting a little bit. It's complicated. Life is complicated. So is the beauty industry.
All right. So before we sign off here, Gordon, give me one like optimistic thing you have for the industry this year. And this better not be silence for 20 minutes.
I think for me, the most optimistic thing I would say is that in spite of what we said about shows, that people, you know, who are interested in having the best career they can and the best business they can, they're getting together. We're coming back with each other. It might be a little different than it was in the past. In some ways, numbers might be smaller in certain places, you know, but I think people who are looking to be connected with other people, who want to grow their business, are really serious about the industry, they're getting out there. They're going to things. And I think that's a good thing. And I hope they'll inspire more to come out. You know, the movers and shaker crowd, they've always understood how important it is to get with people, and they're coming back. You know, I was just invited to speak up in Montreal in May to Intercoiffure. They're expecting one of the biggest ones ever. It's the feedback they're getting. Serious business, 1,100 people. You know, that's a kick-ass event. So I think those who understand the need for knowledge are out there looking for it, and I'm optimistic. I think that's a positive kind of incremental shift that we're still coming back from pandemic. And I think that's going to be good for the entire industry.
Well, I hope that the smaller shows are successful, because certainly we throw our smaller show. Shameless plug for Presley Poe and Friends, April 13th.
Absolutely. And you are growing it every year, which is a sign, right? I mean, it's you know, again, it's that incrementalism that I mentioned, and everything's relative. So for a smaller event, you know, as long as you're growing, it's good.
As long as you're growing, it's good. I like that. We can go out on that note. Mr. Gordon Miller, once again, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your knowledge, and thanks for the state of the industry 2024 or 2020 past. I don't know, whatever. Moving forward, Gordon, thanks for hanging out with us, and thank you for joining us on your day off.
I say.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, share it with friends, give us a rating, and drop a review. To listen to all the latest podcasts, please subscribe from your favorite podcast outlet. And to stay connected on and off the show, you can follow us at Hairdistry on Instagram and all other social media platforms. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Peace and love.